Going Linux, episode 214, Computer America, number 64. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy. Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux. We hope that you'll find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done. In today's episode, Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. Computer America is heard around the world and coast to coast. And I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And welcome into a Tuesday edition of the Computer America show. Got a great program lined up for you tonight. It's going to be all about Linux. That's right. It's the second Tuesday of the month, and we dedicate the entire show to the topic of Linux. And we'll get to it momentarily. Just wanted to I know, Ben, it's your second day back, and hope you're
still happy to be back.
And well, that's good. And I can't say that you're well rested. And
no, the next 2 weeks are looking dim for that. But
yeah,
you know, all right, got to do what you got to do.
This is true. All right, well, let's get to it. Of course, our guest this hour is the Larry Bushy. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And we do this because the Linux operating system, you know, is an extremely important operating system. It's like a third alternative to Windows and Mac OS X. And if you have a Linux question, tonight's the night for you to give us a call. So, Larry, welcome into Computer America. How are you?
Well, thanks. I'm a little bit more rested than Ben, I think. But, you know, they say that yawns are contagious.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
You think you're right.
You got me.
Oh, dear. I'm looking forward to a great show.
Yes. If you hear a loud noise, it's Ben's forehead hitting into the microphone.
Yeah.
I have nothing to say to that. All my quips went away with my sleep, so don't expect a lot, folks.
Actually, your forehead couldn't hit the microphone because you have a headset mic, and it would just go down
the table. I could press it against the table and just slam my face down.
All right. Well, as I said, now, if you want to get in touch with us, if you have a question about subject about Linux, we're going to make it really easy for you. Now, here's the thing. Every month we ask Larry to come up with a topic that we can talk about. And the topic that we're going to be talking about tonight is... Do we nearly need a drum roll? Customizing your Linux desktop. Okay, that's what it is. It's all about how to customize your Linux desktop. And why is that important?
Well, for the advanced Linux users, this will be back to basics. Uh-huh. it's important because you can do it. And everybody likes to make their computer desktop look the way they want it to look. And, you know, you can do that on Mac. You can do that on Windows. And certainly you can do it on Linux as well. And maybe even a little more on Linux than you can on the other two operating systems. And we'll talk a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about some of the basics and maybe talk about some of the options that are available to you and some things you can do in customizing the Linux desktop perhaps that you can't do on other operating systems.
All right. Well, that is interesting. Now, I do know that there are always third-party utilities, like the things like window blinds, you know, and an application that from Stardock that will allow you to customize your desktop on the Mac. There's a lot of customization you can do just from in the operating system. You can buy, you know, additional screensavers, all kinds of things you can buy to make it personalized. And so, obviously, we're going to talk that Linux is not the exception to the rule. You certainly can do that, and we're going to be talking about how all of that happens. So, So let's just start off with desktop customizations.
Sure, absolutely. The First thing, I think we should probably define the term desktop environment, because we're going to be talking a little bit about that, and actually talking a lot about that. In Linux, unlike Windows and Mac, there are multiple desktop environments available. So under Windows, you have the Windows desktop, and on the Mac, you have the OS X desktop.
Right, and there's only one distribution of that operating system, pretty much, and that's one's from Microsoft, the other one's from Apple, and that's pretty much
Yes, exactly even though Linux, depending on your distribution of Linux, it may be from different vendors. Vendors is probably a bad word. Different distributors, if you will, or different developers. The desktop environments are different looks and feel to the user interface that cuts across all of the Linux distributions. So a desktop environment is essentially just that, the graphical user interface and how you interact with it. So it's the framing around a window, for example. What color is the border? Is it transparent? Does it have a color? Where are the buttons? Left, right, top, bottom, wherever you want them. What's the background look like? How do the windows behave?
Do they overlap? Exactly.
Yeah, so all of that. And you have many, many, many different options on Linux. And in fact, you can have different desktop environments installed at the same time. So some of the desktop environment names that you'll hear us talk about here are Unity, GNOME, which is spelled like a garden gnome, but you pronounce the G, so it's GNOME. Something called KDE.
How do you spell which that?
It used to stand for the K Desktop Environment, but they just have taken on KDE as the name now. So it's no longer the K Desktop Environment. It's just three letters that act like it. Another one that's quite popular is XFCE.
That's spelled the same way?
Spelled just like you would think. Cinnamon is another one, very spicy. And mate, spelled mate. and a third one, four more letters, LXDE. So we've gone through our alphabet soup here. Some of these are quite graphic intensive. Some of them are 3D sort of graphical animations and all kinds of things. And others are rather stripped down and just the basics, and give you essentially just a window that you can work with. And depending on what it is you're trying to accomplish or what your preferences are, you can choose to use one or more of them. And we'll talk more about it after the break.
All right. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. Larry Bushy, our Linux correspondent, is here with us for both hours. We're talking about how to customize your Linux desktop. We'll be right back with them. Lots more. Stay with us. Twenty-one minutes after the hour here in the Computer America Show. It is our All Linux Show with Larry Bushy. Did Skype crash on you, Larry?
Yes, it did.
Wow, well,
it's got to do that once a show, apparently.
I didn't even notice it, you know, but I wasn't looking at it at the moment.
Yeah, I think it automatically tries to reset the connection if it drops out.
Which is a good thing. It doesn't give
up. This time it dropped out during the commercial, and nobody even noticed.
That's right, including the host.
I noticed.
You noticed?
I noticed.
Okay. Well, no one will know. Just keep it quiet.
There you go.
Anyway, we're talking about desktop, customizing your desktop in the Linux environment and the Linux operating system. And so we kind of define what a desktop is, and now we're talking about all the different desktop environments that are available.
Going through the alphabet soup.
Right, and so we sort of left off there. So why don't you continue on?
Okay, so each of the desktops that we talked about has its own way of, and by the way, there are more desktops than the several that I mentioned there. I think it was seven of them. There are many, many more than that, and some are even more minimalistic than some of the ones that I've mentioned. But each one has its own way of customizing or allowing you to customize the desktop and your user interface environment. And so I've provided a link to an article on the Going Linux website that describes how to do the customizing, and without reading, you know, step-by-step instructions on the radio, I wanted to basically mention some of the differences and some of the similarities between how you do this setup on Linux and how you do it on Windows, for example. Just draw a comparison, because people are either familiar with how to do this on the Mac or on Windows, and if you haven't tried Linux, you may be thinking, it's probably some geeky command that you have to execute in order to make this change. And no, not really.
That's a nice geeky impersonation you do there.
Yeah, is it good? Yeah, yeah, I practice
that.
I
like that.
That's my normal voice when I'm not on the radio. This is my radio voice, yeah. So anyway, one of the things that you might want to do in the way of customizing is start simple and change the background wallpaper. You may have a picture, you know, saved on your hard drive somewhere you've taken with your own camera, or maybe you found one on the internet that you like, or maybe you've drawn something in one of the applications that allows you to do drawing, and you're quite proud of it, and you want to, you know, put up the stick figure person that you drew, like I have. The Linux desktop environments come with a number of backgrounds as well, much like Windows and Mac do, so that you can select from what's, you know, provided for you, or you can pick from several that are available from your distributions, your Linux distributions repositories, and it's all available right there from within where you change your desktop background. So, essentially what you do, it varies a little bit, like I said, from distribution to distribution and desktop environment to desktop environment. But, the Linux distribution that I use is, Linux Mint. So most of the, examples that I'll give you are related to Linux Mint one way or another, because that's just the kind of guy I am.
Right.
And so whether you're using Mate or Cinnamon as your desktop environment on Mint, those are the two most popular on Mint, you can simply right-click the desktop and choose Change Desktop Background from the menu. Sound familiar?
Yes.
It's just what you do on Windows.
Exactly.
And of course, there are ways to get to it from the menu as well. On Mate, they have something called a control center you can get through the menu, and it's under System Tools on Cinnamon.
On the Mac, if you just right-click on the desktop, one of the options that comes up is Change Desktop Background, you know.
Right. Right, and that's exactly the same thing that appears on Linux as well. Yeah. And not surprisingly, since both the Mac OS X and Linux are based on the Unix operating system way back in history, so they'll be very, very similar. So once you've done that, you can usually just navigate your way around under Mate. You go to Appearances, and under Cinnamon you go to System Settings, and under most other desktop environments it's something very, very similar. And then there will be a tab, usually, for background with a whole selection of wallpapers, or backgrounds as Linux calls them, that you can choose from. And on our on the article on our webpage, it shows some of them that are available first on Mate, and you can see that you know, there are several to choose from there, and there's a little scroll bar, which of course isn't active on a screenshot, but you can see that there are quite a few available. And you see from the screenshot as well, there's a little link that says Get More Backgrounds Online. So if you're not happy with the selection that you have there, you can get a lot more. Now, you know, one of the things you have to be aware of, especially on Windows, is that when you go to websites to download wallpapers and themes and things like that, you've got to worry about viruses and spyware and things because, you know, these are things you're downloading and installing on your on your computer.
Yeah, we had our correspondent Grayson Hamilton last night. What did he say, Ben? He said he was doing something.
Said he bricked his computer by getting a virus.
Yeah, he bricked it. He had to literally send it back in, you know, because he's running Windows.
So you do have to watch for that. And sometimes when you have told your computer go get this and install it, sometimes your antivirus software will catch it and sometimes it won't because you're the one who told it to do it. You know, it's not like it's trying to break in. You invited it in. So the point here is that with Linux, much like with the Mac, it's much more resistant to malware of all sorts, primarily because of the security model that was built into Unix way back when and that Linux and the Mac share. But more importantly, when we're talking about wallpapers as we are, or backgrounds, when you go and click on that link that says Get More Online, you're not going to some random website. You are going to either the Linux distributions repositories, or you're going to a site that is managed by the desktop environment itself. And so it's pretty much screened and validated wallpaper. Now, of course, you can navigate from there to anywhere else in the world, but so you still got to be a little bit careful. But the chances of getting some sort of malware on Linux are pretty minuscule because most of the malware is written for Windows, of course. So even if it is an infected wallpaper, chances of it infecting your Linux computer are pretty slim. But still, you don't want to be passing those viruses on to your Windows using friends.
Well, that makes plenty of sense. All right. Hey, listen, we're at the bottom of the hour. And we're going to continue talking. Of course, the topic is customizing a Linux desktop with Larry Bushy. 866-606-8255. We'll get you on and get you through. Ben and I will be back after these commercial messages. You're listening to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Computer America Show. We have Larry Bushy here, and it's our all Linux show tonight. And I got to be honest, I was working on that logo instead of paying attention. I know that we're talking all about the how you can customize your desktop, and I know Linux has much more to offer than, you know, changing a simple background like most people are used to in Windows. So yeah, where were we?
So we were talking about changing a simple background just to get started kind of quickly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We were discussing the article on Going Linux website. And I wrote most of the article myself, but listener Carlos chipped in with the write-up on KDE. And so I want to thank Carlos for doing that. He wrote about changing the desktop background on KDE is a little bit different. KDE uses something called a Plasma desktop. And it's not a static picture background, but it's, as he describes it, it's more like a canvas where the picture and many different of the widgets sit there and coexist with the background. And you can have one or more desktops all looking the same, or each desktop might have a different background and a different set of widgets on it. And this is something that's a little foreign to Windows users, especially those who haven't added any third-party applications to their computer. But the Mac folks have gotten this fairly recently with in OS X, which is the fact that you can have different desktops, different workspaces. And Linux has had that as well for quite some time. And KDE lets you change the wallpaper on each desktop. Now, so it's a little bit different.
Yeah, let me ask you this. In other words, I know on the Mac, for example, you can every time you boot, for example, it'll pick a random desktop. You have some desktops that are actually, I guess, living, I guess what they call them, desktops, where they will actually change. For example, during the time of the...
Like a fish tank?
No. Like during the time of day, as it, you'll have a landscape, and as it goes in the evening, you'll see the sun setting, you know, on the landscape, and the moon coming up. So
is that big with smartphones?
Yeah, they do that on smartphones too, but I'm just saying you can also do that on your Mac desktop. It's a live desktop, that's just an example, you know, that based on time. You can actually have an animated desktop as well, but of course when you have an animated desktop, that just puts more, you know, load on the processor or whatever.
Exactly right.
So,
yep.
So that you pay a little bit of an overhead for that additional eye candy. If you're using for the average person, I'm sure it would be fine. But if you're a power user and you're doing a lot of stuff and have a lot of applications open, well, the animated desktop might prove to be a little bit much, you know, or it's going to bog things down a little bit. But they are available. I've seen them. I won't use them because for that reason. Now the fish tank is mostly for screensavers. So they have some amazing fish tanks, screensavers. I don't think they have a fish tank as a desktop. At least I have not seen. I'm not saying that it isn't out there, but I'll tell you, having a fish tank for a desktop, that's going to really put a load on your processor.
Yeah, surprisingly though, on Android, which is another version of Linux, on phones and tablets, they have live wallpaper or live desktops, as I think they call it, live wallpaper, where they do have animated desktops. And you would think that on a phone you would have fewer resources at your disposal for running things like that, but it seems to run just fine and not slow things down. So, and they've made that available since some of the early versions of Android out there. So there you go.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so continue on. What else do we got?
Sure. Some of the other things you can do, similar to what you can do on other operating systems, you can change the theme. And so you go with similar sorts of place in the control center or system tools, or in KDE is a little different space as to where you get there, but it's under configure desktop. And you can change the theme. And by theme, what we mean is, you can change the way the borders look. You can change the way the cursor looks. You can change the colors. You can change the background. You can change the panel, as Linux calls it, or the taskbar is what Windows would call it. You can make it transparent. You can make it bigger. You can make it smaller. You can make it colored. You can make it translucent. Lots of different settings there, all under the control of, were all changed all at once by a theme, and you can have themes that make your Linux desktop look like a Mac, convincingly so, with the buttons on the left-hand side and the red, yellow, and green, close buttons and so on, action buttons or whatever it is they call them on a Mac, the desktop wallpaper that looks like the Mac wallpaper and so on. You can even make it look like Windows 7. Or Windows 8. I see they have a new one for Windows 8 as well. Now, I'm not sure that they're going to give you the Metro interface, but I haven't tried it, so I don't know. Maybe it does. But you can theme it to look any way you want. You can make it simple. You can make it fancy. You can make it dance if you want. Literally, you can make as you drag a window across the screen, you can make it bounce and wobble all over the place. So lots of different options there. Some things that aren't available on other operating systems. So getting away from the simple and the obvious sorts of things, there are some other things that you can do in the way of adding components to your desktop. And here I'd like to draw your attention to one of the links that we have in the show notes. We'll take you to the let's see, the cinnamon spices is what they call it. So I use the cinnamon desktop on my Linux Mint. So if you go to cinnamon.linuxmint.com, for those of you who are just listening at this point, in your browser, you'll see some of the options that are available for Linux Mint. And the reason I wanted to show this is so that we have something to show rather than just talk about.
Okay.
So as you can see on the top of the screen there, there's home, news, download, themes. So we talked about themes. Some of the other things are applets, desklets,
And extensions.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So all of these kinds of things are available for many of the Linux desktop environments. And these specific ones are available for Cinnamon, and similar ones are available for other desktop environments as well. But we'll just use these as examples.
And by the way, I want to encourage everybody to go to the show notes that we're looking at, because we have the links to it right there. So you can actually see what we're seeing. It's called the Linux Mint Spices, and there's the link to it, and then you can actually see what the desktop looks like. It's beautiful. It's got a leaf with water on it, and it keeps changing, and it's just very, very neat looking. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh. And it shows the menu for one of the themes for Cinnamon, and you can see that it's sort of transparent. You can see a little bit of the leaf in behind. You can change the transparency if you want it more or less transparent. Some people have it completely transparent, so all you can see is the menu items. Kind of weird in my it's strange, just strange. But if we click on applets, here's something that you can what this does is it gives you a list in a web page of the things that are available for the Cinnamon desktop on Linux. And if you were running this from within Linux and you were using Cinnamon, clicking on these, you could install it directly from this page, or you could install it directly from the setup page that's in your operating system. But you can see, I wanted to show you some of the things, the kinds of things that are available here for applets. And these are applications, little mini applications that would run in what Mac would call the dock, and there are docks for Linux as well, so you might call it a dock, but it would run in the panel on Linux Mint, or in this, not the system tray, but the taskbar, on Windows. And so there are things like a weather icon that tells you the current temperature and other things related to the weather. There is a menu item. So if you want a GNOME menu on your Cinnamon desktop, you can do that. There's a Linux Mint classic menu that's there as well. There's a places icon. So these are little icons that when you click on them, they do something or show you something. So you could have multiple menu selections or multiple menus on your panel at the same time. Why you would want that, I don't know. But you could if you want to.
Okay.
And some people will. There's a little monitor for your hardware to show things like temperature and like your processor temperature and processor speed and how much RAM is free and things like that. Mm-hmm. There's a menu that is like the Windows 7 menu, but for Linux Mint, if all you want is that menu.
And
many other things. You can scroll on forever on here and
absolutely
see lots of different things.
And we'll come back with more. This is the Computer America Show. Larry Bushy continues on with us. Welcome back to the Computer America Show. Larry Bushy is here with us. It's our all Linux show, and we're doing the Linux desktop, and we're again referencing the Computer America our show notes. You can see it at computeramerica.com. Just look at the show notes, and we've just finished with the Linux Mint Spices. We're gonna, if we don't get through them all, you know, you can see them all there, and check all the links out for yourself at computeramerica.com. So where are we at this point? from the...
Okay. So we were talking about desklets right. and applets, rather, and some of the other things that are available for Cinnamon and for other desktop environments are things called desklets and extensions. So applets are the things that sit in the panel or the taskbar, if you're on Windows, and desklets are the things that sit on your desktop. So you can have a clock that has an analog clock or a digital clock. Mm. You can have the weather. You can have the XKCD comic. Mm. For those of us in geek world, XKCD is hilarious comics. You got to be a bit of a geek to get the punchline in some cases, but you can show them on your desktop and have them change every day. They have a thing for AccuWeather, lots of different things there as well. Extensions. Now, here's where you can take the desktop environment to a whole other level. So when you click on the link for extensions, you can see there are several updates recently to some that have been around a while, some brand new ones. One right in the middle under latest is CoverFlow. This is reminiscent of what you might find on a Mac or you might find on an iPhone or iPod, where you're looking at the music and the cover art and you're scrolling through them. This uses the Alt-Tab key, which of course lets you switch between applications on your computer, and makes it appear in that cover flow where the actual windows appear to rotate around you, if you will. Right. So that's an example. And we were talking about multiple desktops earlier. There's a desktop scroller that allows you to change some settings quite easily that allow you to move a window from desktop to desktop by dragging it. Or you can have it so that it stops at the edge of the window so that it won't drag between them, between the various desktops, and many other choices there as well. Some other things that you can do, you can have it so that there's a dock at the bottom. There's something called a CineDock, as you would expect with Cinnamon as your desktop environment. They call it a CineDock, specifically designed for Cinnamon. Some other neat things you can do. You can even have two panels at the bottom. With Cinnamon, without any of these extensions, you can have a panel at the bottom and one at the top, or either place, you know, Windows style at the bottom or Mac style at the top. But this one allows you to put two, one on top of the other, on the bottom.
That's
and
interesting.
I suppose you could have one on the top as well. So now you've got three. So you can move them to the side, of course, as well. But, you know, this kind of these extensions give you capabilities that you don't have out of the box. And that's really the point. So lots of different possibilities. We'll leave the rest as an exercise for our listeners to go to the show notes at Computer America. Take a look at the links. Look on the Cinnamon Spices, and if that doesn't get you going to try to think about trying Linux, I don't know what will.
No, exactly, and it is. It's very tempting. It looks they look really, really nice, professionally rendered. They look and again gives you variety. It really does.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
You might use one for a while and then say, no, let me try something else.
And the other nice thing is you can have multiples of these installed at the same time. So. You can have the Cinnamon desktop and Mate installed at the same time. Of course, you can only use one at a time. But all you have to do is log out and log back in using the other desktop. And now you're using a completely different desktop. And there are many, many other ways to get different desktops as well. So that's just one of them by logging out and logging in.
Now, I don't know, do screensavers really, do they come under, they don't really come under the high heading of a desktop, but there are really, you know.
I don't use a screensaver myself, but yeah, I suppose it comes under customizing your desktop.
Yeah.
And there are screensavers available for Linux as well. Like I said, I don't use it primarily because You know, I don't use the black screen with the green phosphor anymore.
Yeah, that's right. Screensavers are really are an anachronism. You don't have burn-in anymore with your monitors per se. So,
right.
So, but there, it's more of an aesthetic thing. And one of my favorite is something called Red Pill. So when it goes into it, it looks like you're looking at a scene from The Matrix, you know, the little green things coming down
sure,
the top,
yeah.
You know, it looks like it looks like The Matrix. And then I have another one, which I like, is a System 47, which is a screensaver that turns your screen into an Elcar system from Star Trek, The Next Generation, that thing. And it looks like one of the screens that they use in Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And it's animated and it's moving and it's making the sounds. And so I usually put that up though only when I have visitors coming over. So they go, oh my God, that sounds so cool. You know, but
that's what it's all about is eye candy.
Yeah, it's
visitors,
eye candy.
Right?
It really is. But I do leave Red Pill on. Red Pill, I do. I kind of like it. It looks kind of neat and it's very non-intrusive.
Okay.
And I know they make versions of it for, I know, Windows and Mac, and I believe Linux as well.
Yep, absolutely. I had it on one or two of my computers myself.
Yeah, okay. But then why'd you take it off?
Like I said, I don't use screensavers, so it was on there just to see what it looked like, and yep, it reminds me of The Matrix.
Now, yeah, because Ben uses a lot of desktop. He usually has something from World of Warcraft or something along those lines on as your desktop.
Yeah, sure,
background.
I'll change my wallpaper every once in a while.
Ben,
what's your
current wallpaper now? Your desktop?
I have many of them. Windows actually has a nice little feature where same thing with Mint. It, you know, I have like 10 or 12 images and I have it rotate
through them. Sure, yeah,
very nice.
Yeah, they look nice, and usually it's game oriented. It's from one of the games that he plays. So and it looks really slick, you know.
As Grayson said last night, games are art.
Yes, they are. They can be.
Yeah. Very much so, and background wallpaper too.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so when we come back, we're gonna switch gears and get into email. But again, you can read all of these at our show notes page at computeramerica.com. You can see everything; all the links are there, and you can read from the emails, 5 tweaks to make after installing a solid state drive, Komodo antivirus for Linux, and great programming interactive courses for newbies. An independent Android market, and all of them. They're all there waiting for you. So head over there. We're going to be right back within the hour of Computer America here on the Business Talk Radio Network. Stay with us.
Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And we continue on with Larry Bushy, our guest for the hour, for both hours. He is the host of the Going Linux podcast, and it is our all Linux show tonight. And in the first hour, we actually had a topic, which was basically how
customizing your Linux desktop.
Customizing your Linux desktop. Thank you. Now we're going to kind of shift gears here, and in this hour, Larry, and we're going to go to email, Computer America email for the show. Now these are emails that you get over the month. Which you feel are relevant, they're good. Most people can benefit from them. They're kind of there. They point out interesting articles, things, or points they want to make. And this first one is from somebody called Rich, who has a question on using solid state drives.
Yes, and an episode or two ago of the podcast, we covered setting up solid state drives on Linux, and and there are a couple of settings you need to tweak to optimize your computer for a solid state drive. Mm-hmm. Like you don't want it to spend a lot of time writing temporary files to the solid state drive, since they don't have as long a life as your average spinning hard drive would have. Mm-hmm. So you want to be a little bit more careful. You want to set up the features built into the hard drive itself to prevent some of the issues you might have. Trim, it's called, on a solid state drive. And we gave a whole episode on that, and we produced an article as well, and we've got a link in the show notes to that article if you're curious as to how to actually do that setup. So Rich wrote in saying, "Greetings. I'm a little bit behind in my podcasts. I started from episode number one a few months back. We are now on episode 215 or something like that." So he's gone back a long way. "I just finished episode 195, Solid State Drives on Linux." He made good time. "And followed your instructions posted here," and he gives a link to our website in his email, like we didn't know where it was. He has a question, though. He says, under the instructions, "Enable trim, set up step number two, the steps were unclear if you only add the additional fields to the volume which had discard errors equals remount dash RO, as in your example, or do you add them to all your EXT4 volumes?" For newbies to Linux, EXT4 is one of the file systems that's available for Linux, kind of like FAT32 or NTFS would be for Windows. "For example, so far I have this," and he gives his setup, which is very similar to what we gave in our instructions. He says, "Should I add the flags to the home directory or the home partition volume, or just to the home partition or to all of the partitions? Lastly, under step three, settings for temporary and log files resulted in some behaviors I didn't think about at first and don't recall being warned about. For example, I had to comment out the temp file system and the logs for variables to go to get several applications working again, such as the application NGINX. I'm not familiar with that particular application. He said, if you refuse to start, though, without this log file path. Then I noticed all my cron jobs were missing after Dropbox stopped keeping documents in sync on other devices. I added them back, but after reboot, they were gone again. Then I remembered why. I also had to comment out tempfs/var/spool to get the crontab files back. Thanks for the suggestion. Perhaps a few warnings are in order on that page, Rich." And thanks, Rich. Very good points. The temp files, what he's talking about there is we gave some recommendations on not saving the temporary files to your hard drive, but saving them rather to RAM. And so apparently he had some issues with doing that, and one particular software application didn't like looking at RAM for the log files as well. So we'll be putting some warnings in the article about the fact that you may want to not redirect your temporary files and have them actually go to the SSD drive after all if you find that some of your applications don't work as expected. And in fact, I installed an SSD drive on my HP computer that I run Linux on, and I had to comment out some of the redirecting of the temporary files as well. I found not the same number or severity of problems as Rich found, but I found a couple of things that didn't quite work the way I needed them to. So I set that back to quote normal, and everything went back to working again. So thanks, Rich.
All right, there you go. Okay, so let's move on to the next one, which is David.
David, yeah, he's making the switch to Linux.
All right.
He says, "I'm using Crossover from CodeWeavers to fetch in my Quicken file." And again, pause for a definition here. So Crossover is... like Wine, it's an application that allows you to run Windows programs in your Linux software without having to install Windows. So it's from CodeWeavers, which is the same company that does Wine. So they have a more professional version called CodeWeavers, which, of course, you need to pay for, whereas Wine is free. So he's using Crossover so that he can use Quicken. And he says, I'm using TeamViewer to get signed into my work machine, which is running Windows. And I love the music player on Linux. I'm not sure what the music player has to do with all the rest of the stuff, but okay, good. So my question is, how to enlarge my dual boot space allocated to Linux? Really would be nice to eventually gobble up Windows. This just works. No candy, just works. I'm using Ubuntu 12.04. The Unity desktop environment is ugly, but hey, it works. Keep up the good work, David. Well, as we discussed, you can change the desktop environment. Just go to the Software Center and install a different one. I would suggest Cinnamon, mainly because that's my favorite currently.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Right. And yes, you can change the partition size that you have allocated for Linux. And so, again, let's pause for a definition here. So David has a dual boot system. So he has Windows installed, and I'm assuming that it was installed on the computer when he purchased it. Mm-hmm. And then he installed Linux alongside of Windows in a dual boot configuration so that when he starts up his computer, he can choose which operating system he wants to run. And most people will partition their hard drive so that half of the space is Linux and half of it is Windows. And as they begin to like Linux more and more, they say to themselves, geez, I wish I hadn't taken up so much space for Windows. I'm filling up my Linux side of the partition. Well, a couple of solutions there. One is you can open the Windows partition from within Linux and look at the files on there and save files to that partition just as easily, or you can change the partition size. So
which you couldn't used to do, but now of course you can.
Of course you can, yeah. Yes. So there is a utility on Linux called gparted. And there's a KDE version of that as well that lets you change the partition sizes by dragging something back and forth.
Yeah. Gparted. It's like departed, but with a G.
With a G.
Exactly.
Yep.
All right. We're going to take a break and we'll continue on. We're doing our emails in this hour. It's our All Linux Show with Larry Bushy. We're going to do a lot more of them when we come back. This is the Computer America Show. Stay with us. We're continuing on. It's our All Linux Show tonight. Larry Bushy is our guest. He is the creator of the Going Linux podcast, and we're doing emails now that were sent to him. And we're going to do this next one is from David.
We did David.
No, I'm sorry, Sebastian. So, Sebastian.
Yeah, Sebastian from Poland.
Right, from Poland. Yeah, all the way from Poland. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, and he's providing us some useful links, of course. He writes, hi, guys. First of all, I would like to thank you for your podcast. Well, you're welcome. It's a great way to listen about Linux news and topics and to learn English. We have a lot of folks listening to the podcast to learn English. I'm glad I don't have a thick accent, I guess.
And you also have a lot of people who know English who, you know, don't really know what you're talking about in the first place, even though it's, you know, their main language. So it's doubly impressive that someone can listen to Going Linux and pick up on a lot.
Yes, exactly, especially when we have to spell things like XFCE and KDE all the time.
There you go.
Anyway, continuing with Sebastian's email, he says, I recommended your show to my friends for learning by listening. As for the feedback, I remember that some time ago you have got a – well, let me turn off my phone here. I am getting a call. Yes,
that's
I am.
Sebastian from Poland is calling you right now.
It's a listener to the Going Linux podcast calling in on my cell phone. Too bad we can't get them on the air.
Yeah.
Let's see. As for feedback, I remember some time ago you've got a podcast about antivirus in Linux. There were some problems with installing Bitdefender. I personally think that Linux doesn't need antivirus, but I want to share with you some solution. Mm-hmm. Komodo antivirus for Linux. And Komodo, I think, is one of the ones that we mentioned when we discussed antivirus on Computer America here on one of the radio shows we were on. And it wasn't the top pick, I guess. But so Sebastian's providing a link and some updated information on that as well. He says, I also would like to give you some useful links, LearnStreet.com and CodeAcademy.com. We'll have those links in the show notes. Mm-hmm. And those are for people who want to learn how to program.
Right.
And so the courses you can take there. He says these both address lead to great programming interactive courses for newbies. For an end, I've got something for Android users. apt2ide.com, an independent Android market. Keep it going. Greetings from Poland. And anybody here read Polish? He writes, with all the best, Sebastian. And the reason I know he wrote it that is because he translated it underneath.
Oh, you didn't put Google Translate or something?
No, he translated it.
Well, then you don't know if that's what it really says.
I'm hoping that's what it says. I really am. So, thank you, Sebastian, for all of those links. And I have to say, I took a look at apt2ide. And since it's an independent Android market, I can't vouch for it one way or another, but it does seem to have some interesting applications for your Android phone. And, of course, Android is based on Linux.
Okay.
So that's okay. It. So yeah, that's it. That's all I had to say.
Let's go from Poland over to Germany.
Sure.
Yeah.
And brief flight.
Yes.
Okay. Right. Or drive. Bernd from Germany writes about some of our most recent episodes. He says, thanks for your show. At first, I want to say that I am very happy about it, that there is someone outside to inform and support Linux. That is important. That's our freedom. I just want to ask if you are making this show for beginners or for geeks. I believe that the geeks know something about tweaking the system, and the beginners don't know what you're talking about. I'm using Linux since a few years now, but is not that easy to change from Debian to an RPM distro. What I want to say is, for beginners, there is too much information in your show. You have everything mixed together. Distros, package management, graphical user interfaces, and Firefox. I was a beginner too a few years ago, and it is not easy to switch. But I see great progress in the effort to convert users to Linux. Steam, Raspberry Pi, and all the other Linux-driven devices are helping. I believe that Linux will become even more important over time. Thanks for your show, Bernd. So, we try very hard not to mix things together. And one of the things that we do is on the Going Linux podcast, we have three episodes a month. First of all, we rebroadcast these appearances on the Computer America show, and the recordings that the Computer America folks make, and thank you very much for allowing us to do that. The other two shows, we take a listener feedback, where we do nothing but emails, and then we take a user experience topic. But we don't just stop there. We take a topic and we normally do an introductory episode 1 month, and then we go in depth the next month. And so the first month is more for the beginner, and the second month is more for the more advanced user trying to build their competence and confidence with Linux and its applications. So we try to separate them out. But of course, when we're doing listener feedback like we're doing right now, the subjects do get mixed up because that's the way the emails come in, and we get them from beginners and we get them from experienced folks like yourself, Baron. So bear with us a little bit, and we try to make it as easy as we can for the newbie. And where possible, when we get an email from somebody who's talking about an advanced topic, we'll pause and define terms, or like we've done here, we'll describe a little bit more in depth by interrupting the email to talk about what this actually means in layman's terms, or in terms that might be a little more appropriate for somebody new to Linux.
Okay. All right. Well, good. All right. Music means we're at the bottom of the hour break, and then we're going to continue on. We're going to go to first from Germany and Poland, and then we're going to go to someplace really exotic, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. New Jersey. Tony from Jersey asks about screen resolution. We'll go to his email right after these commercial messages. You're listening to the Computer America Show.
Welcome back to the Computer America Show. 35 minutes past the hour on our All Linux show tonight. And we're doing emails from some of Larry's listeners. And so far, you know, they've been really good. The last one from Germany, good points, but, you know, it's really hard to talk about a system or, you know, talk about something with technology and not mention another thing that you haven't explained yet, especially for beginners because, you know, it's a computer. Everything's related.
Yes, so, exactly. So you can get in deep pretty quickly too.
but I think you do a really good job at, you know, trying to define all the terms, and, you know, so you do a pretty good job.
That's why he keeps coming back.
Exactly.
Larry, I just want to just take a slight segue here and mention we were talking about it in the chat room, is that Gmail has had a quote-unquote improvement.
Radical change.
Yes, they've added tabs to Gmail, you know, and some of the tabs that they've added, they added social, promotions, updates, and forums. These are the four tabs, and these are the primary tabs. I don't know if I like it as much right now, but what really miffed me is that I went ahead and deleted all the tabs just to get back so it looks like it would normally looks, and I said, well, let me bring one back and see if I can rename it. I couldn't figure out how to bring the tabs back until just now. I was sitting there trying to figure out where. Is there a plus sign? Is that nothing? Finally, I found it. It's under the on the left-hand side there where it says Compose, Gmail, Inbox, Start, Important. There's a little thing to the right of that. It's a little down arrow. If you click at it, and then you go Inbox type, it says Default, and then it says Manage Your Inbox Settings. So you have different settings. It's not under the normal Gmail settings. It's under something called Inbox Settings, and there they are, Primary, Social. You check one of them, and then it'll bring that tab back. So Google, in its infinite wisdom, has decided to give us not one but two settings on Gmail.
Right. And depending on where you are in their release cycle, you may see what you just described, Craig, or as I see it when I click that little down arrow, it says Inbox Type Default, Important First,
yes.
Unread First, Starred First, or Priority Inbox.
Yeah, that's there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really, let's not make it consistent for anybody. And as I said in the chat room, if you don't like the way a Google app works, just wait a month or two. They'll change it completely.
Or they'll force you into using it.
One or the other.
Yeah.
And then they'll change it completely.
But the inbox settings is under default. If you just scroll over to default, then it says manage your inbox settings. That's the only way that I can see that you can get to it. And there's how you can bring the tab. If you've deleted the tabs, that's how you bring them back. But, exactly.
Well, and all this relates to Linux because Google uses Linux on their servers, I guess.
And also, if you're using Linux, you're using Gmail, you're going to have the same interface. So there it is.
It's cross-platform.
Right. So if you're using Gmail on Linux, you just found out how to bring your tabs back if you decided to delete them.
There you go. Perfect.
All right. So
perfect.
Let's hear from Tony in New Jersey.
Okay, so Tony says, hi, Larry, I have a big problem in where I can't find the area to fix my resolution. It's too big.
It actually goes off the screen. It's so huge, right? Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. I've just upgraded to Ubuntu 12.04 on my Dell Inspiron 1525, but I'm using a ViewSonic 24-foot monitor. I think he means 24-inch monitor. 24. He's using a projection screen, I guess. 24-inch monitor that's hooked up to the laptop. I only have two that I can choose from. I'm assuming he means two resolutions.
Right.
Either 1024 by 768 in a 4x3 configuration, which is on now, or 800 by 600, also a 4x3. The 800 is even worse. Well,
of course, it's lower resolution. Yeah,
Tony, yeah. So what I'm thinking here is, and Tony and I have conversed a little bit, but we haven't come to a resolution exactly on what's going on here. But one
Wait,
of two things.
Was that meant to be a pun?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But he either needs a driver for that display, which I don't think he does. The ViewSonics have been around for a long time, and it's probably already in the Linux kernel. Mm-hmm. More likely than not, and knowing Tony and his penchant for getting himself into boxes like this, he's got the screens mirrored so that both of them are displaying exactly the same thing. Mm. And sometimes when you do that, you only have the choice in resolution of the resolutions that the two monitors have in common. Mm. So his laptop screen, which is probably a widescreen configuration. Mm-hmm. I don't know on the 1525 whether that's 4x3 or it's 16x9. Mm-hmm. But if it is, that would explain this. And the ViewSonic is probably a 4x3. And so the 1024x768 and the 800x600 are probably the two resolutions that both monitors can display. And so what you want to do, Tony, is go into your display settings and uncheck the box that says mirrored. And what that will do is allow you to have the monitors be independent of one another. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you click apply, you will find that your laptop screen will be separate from from the desktop screen on the little graphical interface that you have there. And if they're not, They're just overlaid on top of one another. Just drag one to the left or the right. And what you'll find is when you click on the little icon for your laptop screen, you'll be able to select all of the resolutions that your laptop is capable of. And when you click on the icon that represents the separate monitor, the 24-inch monitor, you'll have all of the resolutions that it's capable of. And you'll be using what's called an extended desktop.
Right.
And so you can show the monitor to the left or the right or above your laptop or below your laptop.
Well, it's
you
nice
can move it around.
Yeah. It's nice to place it usually left or right, because if you have your the ViewSonic to the right of the laptop on that little icon there, then when you start dragging your mouse to the right edge of the screen of your laptop monitor, you'll see it appear on the left side of the big screen as you continue to move it over to the right, which is kind of cool.
Right.
So it gives you a nice
It is, and it works quite nicely.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, Tony, that solves your problem and brings you to a resolution. Yes, that time it was meant.
At the time it was intended. Good. Well, it worked out so nicely. I thought you did it on purpose before.
Yeah, we'll go with
sure,
that.
That's it. Okay.
Okay.
Paul comments on our comments about fixing Window Ubuntu Linux dual boot loader. I've always wondered about the dual boot. So when it comes up, the very first thing after all the little, system stuff, see a menu and it says press 1 for Windows, press 2 for Linux. Is that what happens?
No, it's not. It's not even that difficult. There's a little menu, and you can select the one on the screen. So you just highlight the one that you want, whether it's Windows or whether it's Linux. Mm-hmm. And depending on which distribution you have, it'll either say Ubuntu in Paul's case, since that's what he's using, or it'll say, you know, Linux Mint or Fedora or whatever distribution you're using. And you can have triple boot and quadruple boot systems as well. And the menu will have a menu entry for each of the operating systems.
So it just, and, but that menu stays up until you make a selection, right?
Well, it will if you move the cursor. So it'll stay there forever if you move the cursor. If you don't, it will pick the first one on the list, and that will be the one that it'll boot into.
So, right, no interaction is necessary. You have like about 5 seconds or so to pick one.
Yeah, I think on most distributions it defaults to 10, and you can change that in the settings to whatever you would like.
Okay, so that's nice. So you can have it go right into it, or you can pick whatever just by hitting. Okay, good.
Yeah, it works quite nicely. Yeah. So Paul writes, I've used EasyBSD for installing Linux Ubuntu along with Windows 7 or Windows 8. It would work for Vista as well. And I have to stop here because he's responding specifically to an email that we received to somebody who was having trouble restoring the Windows MBR, the master boot record, after a mishap that they had with Linux, and so needed to find something that would allow him to boot back into Windows again, because the only option he had was Linux. And we've provided on the show, as well as in show notes and so on, some technical ways to do that. And we discussed it in our last listener feedback episode. But Paul's responding saying that he's used this additional utility called EasyBSD. And it is not the BSD distribution that is like Linux, also based on Unix and what Mac is based on, but it is specifically a bootloader that's designed for fixing these issues. And we'll continue on with Paul, the rest of Paul's email after the break.
All right. This is the Computer America Show. Ben and I are talking to Larry Bushy. We're doing emails sent to us in this hour. It's all about Linux. And are on our All Linux Show. We'll continue on with more. Stay with us. We are back with Larry Bushy, doing our All Linux Show. It's our last segment. And so we're doing this this email.
Right.
And this is the one we're going to finish up with Paul.
Yeah, we'll finish up Paul. So Paul's talking about how to a little utility to bring back booting to a problematic installation of dual boot system with Windows and Linux. So he's recommending EasyBSD. He says it's a free Windows program that easily rewrites the bootloader, providing a choice on boot between the Windows partition and the Linux partition. It's actually EasyBCD, works better than the Windows recovery disk, which may rewrite the bootloader without recognizing that Linux Ubuntu is there. Paul. And, so it's EasyBCD. Paul, you make some very good points there. The recommendation that we had made to the listener who wrote in is to, go to a Microsoft article that provides information about restoring the bootloader, which, you know, if it was Windows XP or earlier, it would be very, very easy to do. But with Windows 7 that this person was using, they don't make it easy anymore to fix the master boot record on Windows. They actually require that you have a Windows CD, and how many people actually get one with their computer anymore, and how many people who could make a recovery CD from the recovery partition actually do that? Probably not very many. So the listener we were talking to had that problem, and EasyBCD will provide a solution for
great.
Sure.
Listen, Larry, Will Hayes in the chat room wants to know what Linux distribution you use. I thought you were using Ubuntu, but I said I could be wrong.
Yeah, I actually use Linux Mint, Mint 15, which, Will Hayes was saying that he just converted to Linux Mint, to Linux Mint 15, and we were talking a little bit in the chat room about that, and welcome aboard. he describes himself as a Linux newbie, and I've mentioned that I'm here on the third Tuesday of every month and can help him out, that's for sure.
Well, that's really good. Well, glad to help out. Now, I'm looking at, I think the last two emails that we have are really long. I don't know if we're going to have
time. They are. So maybe we can talk a little bit about what's coming up on the Going Linux podcast, which Will Hayes is another place you can go, goinglinux.com, for more information.
Although I do want to mention that Magnum says that he listens. He mentions episode number 209, Computer America Show. Actually, Computer America Show number 62. So,
right, exactly.
All right, so we'll have to we'll have to get, maybe we'll lose that on the next time you all come right on the show. All right.
Sounds
so. Go ahead. So tell us a little bit about the Going Linux podcast.
Yeah. So coming up on our very next episode, right after this Computer America episode, is an episode that we've done, Bill and I have done, on cloud storage. We do a little review of some of the options that are available to you, not just Dropbox, not just Ubuntu One, not just Box.com, but some of the others that are available that might allow you to do your own personal private cloud storage, if you wish, and keep all your secrets secret and not share them with, you know, third-party commercial enterprises that store your stuff on the internet.
What? So, so that next time we'll go around.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So, if you want to keep your stuff from the prying eyes of the NSA, listen in to our episode number 215, and
I don't think
you'll be able to store stuff on the cloud.
Oh, yeah,
I'm sure the government will be tuning in.
Yes, I'm sure they are. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
They are everywhere, you know, and it's just a fact of life, and so
it's the world we live in. I guess it is.
You know, everything and anything.
But there are ways around it. I'm sure as Larry will get into detail.
Yeah.
There are. Right. And, if you want a secure operating system that is less likely to be impinged upon by other agencies like them, Linux is the way to go.
Okay. All right. Well, Larry, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. Again, you can always check it out at computeramerica.com. We have the link to the Going Linux podcast. Check it out. And, Larry, thanks so much for being with us here tonight.
My pleasure.
So about wraps it up. Remember, everything you need to know about Computer America is at our website at computeramerica.com. You know, stop over there, you know, noodle around, surf around, and you can see our top tech awards. We've got all kinds of great things there. Ben just designed a new logo for it, which I think looks a lot better.
It's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress. But just check us out at computeramerica.com. So we'll see you tomorrow night. And so until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. Have a great evening, and we will see you tomorrow night.
Good night, everyone.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.